Hello, Fredrik Hanukkah. I wanted to thank everybody for the kind gift. Really appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. So we're right in the middle of the victory, and it's such an important lesson here about not to let the complainers spoil the victory. Many times, a person has their high moment in life, and then along comes some complaint, and it bursts your bubble, and it ruins that special time. Here, Gideon led us to victory over the Midianites, who for 40 years were a menace, and if you remember, things were so bad, people couldn't even plant their own crops. They would come and take them away. And he finally led us to victory. And instead of getting a thank you, he gets a complaint. And it's just an insight into human nature. And sometimes when a person complains, we take it personal and we allow it to ruin the good news. And the fact that there are people that are complaining or somebody that, you know, wasn't happy about something, you know, you seated them at the wrong table. How could you do this to them? You know, and it's, you know, your daughter's getting married or your grandson's having a bar mitzvah or whatever it is, and, or your child. And this person, because you seated them at the wrong seat and you always do it and this and that, they're going to ruin your time. Don't let them ruin your time. Learn the lesson from Gideon. That's the, that's just human nature. So, let's see. Chapter 8. That's where we left off. And that's exactly what happened. And Vayomer Elav Ish Ephraim. And the men of Ephraim said to him, Mahadavar Hazas Yisalana, what did you do to us? And again, what do you mean what he do to them? He's just saved their lives. He just saved the country from the Midianites. What do you mean? What did you do to us? But they took it personally. Other people sometimes see things differently than we see them. They felt because they weren't called, because he didn't think of them ahead of time, that he was writing them out of the books. And the tribes were very sensitive. One thing which is interesting was that Gideon was from Manasseh, if you remember. And Ephraim was the other tribe that was a descendant of Yosef. And the siblings can be very sensitive to each other. That sometimes happens where one sibling is, could be there was some kind of rivalry there. He felt like, you know, your tribe's getting ahead of our tribe. There also was a challenge between Ephraim and Manasseh always as to who would be, one tribe was older than the younger. If you remember that even Yaakov Avinu, when he blessed Ephraim and Manasseh, he put the younger one first. And then Yosef said, you know, tried to straighten out the hands, and he wouldn't let him straighten out the hands. He said, no, I know what I'm doing. And so any time the younger tribe or the older tribe, there was always a rivalry there somewhat. So therefore, here Ephraim comes and says, why didn't you call us? Ma'adav esisalanu levilti karasalanu. Why didn't you call us? Ki'alati lelochim b'midjan. They fought with him. Now, it doesn't just say they fought with him. It says they fought with him strongly. Whatever that means. How do you fight strongly? But strongly means, you know, it wasn't just a complaint. They were giving it to him. Now, keep in mind, he's in the middle of the battle. He's in the middle of chasing them. And here they come and they say, how come you didn't call us sooner? What's the matter? On the other hand, you can look at the people of Ephraim, and they are saying that they also want the mitzvah. They also wanted to be involved. That was important to them. And so here the Jewish people is being saved, and you didn't want to bother them. They're saying, well, of course you should bother us. That's what we're here for. We want part of this mitzvah also. And so they asked to be called in, and they gave him a hard time. Now, there's a pasuk in Mishle that answers this, that sometimes somebody comes with us in anger, is angry with us. And if we answer it a certain way, there'll be a civil war. And we answer it softly, and nothing happens, and everything goes back to the way it is. And so sometimes when somebody comes with you with a fury, if you answer them the right way, you'll save the day. And so that's kind of what happens over here. He answers them with humility. And that always helps. Whenever, in other words, like sometimes a person can say a polite thing. In most cases where they have road rage, if the person would say, why'd you cut me off? And you'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. person to save their life. But instead you say, you know, because you were driving too fast, or you did this, you did that, and then they go off. And it's just for nothing. All the person has to, even if the other guy was driving crazy, or he was at fault, all you have to do is say, you know, be polite, or say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, and have a nice day. You know, everything is fine. But if, what?
See, don't kill me.
Don't kill me. Right. It's just not worth it. It's not worth it. He says, you know, hello tovo lo sefrai mi butzer aviezer. He said that, you know, you guys, of course, it's not because I thought I was greater than you. The opposite. Your gleanings, your leftovers are better than our first choice. In a farm, they have the choicest grapes. And then they have the gleanings, the leftovers, and so usually when they pick the first time, they take the best, and there's if they're what's left over isn't very good. So he said, your leftovers are better than our choicest grapes, meaning that you first of all, I value you. I realize that you are much greater than I am. That's first of all, and then second of all, you actually did get to participate. Look at what you did. Hashem gave you the, you killed the two great leaders. And what am I in compared to you? And so when he said that, then all of a sudden they calmed down. And the civil war was averted and there was no problem. And this could have been a different story. You know, had he answered them harshly, maybe there would have been bloodshed. And there's so many times in history where there is that road rage. And that's the time to prepare the soft answer is before that moment. Because if a person just waits till the moment of anger, we have very little control when we're angry. But if we think ahead of time that if a moment of anger occurs, I'm going to be very careful how I answer. I'm going to try to answer softly. I'm going to try to be apologetic, even though he should apologize to me, because it's not worth the anger that's going to come forth out of this. If you prepare for it ahead of time, maybe you can avoid it. But at any rate, he avoided it, and we have no civil war. We can get back to the business over here. But it's just so much the tendency of people to complain that you can't let it get in the way of what you have to accomplish. He has a job to do, and I'm not going to worry about that that complaint. And again, it's something that I'm sure we've all experienced it. I was trying to decide, should I tell you what happened to me once? But we've all had experiences in our life where somebody complained unjustly and wrongly at the wrong moment when you should have been celebrating, you should have been happy, and this person is coming and complaining. And we have a choice of how we're going to deal with it. Verse 4. So Ginon continued the battle with his 300 men, Asher Ito, Yafim, and Rosen. At this point, there's nothing that tires a person out like war. You know, like they're physically exerting themselves, and if you remember, they were up at night the night before, and they were tired, and they were hungry. Verse 5. Shakol Yandiva. Yomar La'anshe Sukkos. So they get to the place called Sukkos. It's mentioned in the Torah that that was the place where Yaakov Avinu had stopped near Sukkot. So he spoke to the people of Sukkot. He said, "Tanana, please give us kiklas lechem, give us some bread for the people, Asher Rad, that are with me. Ki ayafim hein. We're really tired. Vanochi Roda, and we're chasing after Zevacha Tamuna." If you remember, just like in the battle with Sisera, that if you don't get the leaders, you always have to be afraid they'll come back. You know, remember they. The biggest regret was they didn't get Saddam Hussein the first time. You know, if you don't get the leaders, they come back and get you. So he said, I'm chasing after Zevach and Talmuna. These are two other of the big terrorist enemies. So he's chasing after them, and we can't. When you have them on the run, that's the time to go after them. These are the kings of Midian. V'yomar Sari Sukkos. Now here. The people of Sukkos, they answer ungratefully. Hakaf Zevach Tamuna Ate Biyadacha. He said, "Do you think that you defeated them already? Ki niten l'tzvecha lechem, that we should give you bread?" Now, this is a little bit hard to understand how they answered him. Basically, they said, "You think you're going to win this battle? You think it's a done deal? It's not a done deal. Why should we waste our bread on you?" The simple of it is that if you help the enemy, And when the power that's there comes back, they'll hold it against you. And so if we're going to give you food and you're not going to win this battle, then when the Midianites come back, they're going to accuse us of aiding their enemy, and they're going to wipe us out. So they really were showing a lack of faith. You know, here Gideon was coming with his 300 men. Now, he had defeated the main army. And once a person sees a miracle, we don't always know when Hashem is going to make a miracle. We can't always say, have faith. But once we see a miracle, then we have to see that the miracle is going to continue. And so here, they saw Gideon defeat the main camp, tens of thousands of soldiers. So why all of a sudden are they saying, how are your 300 men going to defeat them already? We're afraid they're going to come back and they're going to hold it against us. It shows a lack of faith. And with this, we can explain something in the Parsha. I always like to connect things. Very strange thing happened in the Parsha. Yosef's in prison. And he's roommates with the chief baker and the chief butler to Paro. And they tell him the dream. And he realizes that the butler, the one that was in charge of the Paro's cup, is going to get his job back. So he begs him. He says, please, remember me. You're going to get out of here and remember me. I don't want to be here all my life. Very reasonable plea, right? I have to be remembered. And sure enough, he gets called out of the pit, he gets a job back, and he forgets Yosef. Until this week's Parsha, when Paro has a dream, then he remembers him. So Chazal say, why did it take so long? Why didn't he remember him right away? So they fault Yosef for begging him, for saying, please remember me. Why did they fault poor Yosef for trying his best? He didn't like it there in the prison. He wanted out quick, so he said, please remember me. What's wrong with begging to get out? So one of the answers given is that what usually your bunk mate in prison is not a person who has very much clout or somebody who can help you. And what does Hashem do? Hashem allows Yosef to be next to the person who has direct access to Paro. That's the one person who can take him out. So he should have seen that Hashem was making a miracle for him. Once he saw that Hashem was making a miracle for him, he didn't need to beg. He should have had faith. That was, once you see that Hashem is leading the way, then you don't already have to question. There seems to be the, and this is also what explained one of the Hanukkah mysteries. And that is it says that when they lit the candles, that it lit for 8 days, and therefore there was only enough oil to last for one day. And it lasted for 8 days. So the question is, why do we celebrate the first day if they found enough oil to last for one day? Why do we celebrate today? They found enough oil for one day. The first day wasn't a miracle. They found enough for one day. You should just celebrate 7 days because the one day burned 7 days. So one of the answers given was that they split it up into seven and split it up into eight, and even though there wasn't enough to burn the whole night, each one burned the whole night. That's one answer that's given. And so they ask, well, if that was the case, how did they know there'd be a miracle? And the answer is, after what they've been through, they knew there'd be a miracle. There are some times when you see that you're in Hashem's hands. You see that Hashem is making miracles. You see that he's leading the way. When you see that Hashem is leading the way, then you have a right to say, all right, I'm not going to worry about this. Hashem has got me this far. He's going to help me on the way out. And that seems to be the, that's one idea. There are other reasons. Some people say even the fact they found one thing of oil that wasn't tampered with, that was a miracle. But the idea here is that they were lacking of faith. And not only lacking of faith, even if they weren't sure if Hashem was going to help Gideon defeat these two kings, they should have been grateful to him. Here this guy was risking his life for them. And he's hungry. All he was doing was asking for food. Couldn't you help him? And they said, no, we better not risk it. So Gideon says, V'yomer Gideon l'chein b'seis Hashem etzev v'tamuna v'yadi. He said, when God gives me into their hands. Now he acknowledged that I don't look like I'd be able to defeat them on my own, but when God helps me and I defeat them, then we're going to teach you a lesson. Vidashti is besarchem. We're going to thrash your flesh. Veskotzia midbar with the thorns. Veser barnakim and the briars. It's going to. It's not. real clear exactly what he was going to do, but I'm sure it wasn't pleasant, whatever it was. He was going to tan their hides or whatever, or he was going to teach them a lesson that the... in other words, he felt that they had a lack of faith and a lack of gratitude, and that was wrong. So, God willing, when he came back, he said he was going to set an example for them. Okay, and they still didn't change their mind. They didn't give them any food. Verse 8. V'yal misham Penuel, and then he came to the city called Penuel. V'davel en kazos, and he said, all right, maybe you guys can help us. We're really hungry, we're really thirsty. We've been fighting all day long. Maybe you can spare some food. V'yano osan shi Penuel, kasher anu anshi sukos. And they said the same thing. They said, you know, if we give you food, the Midianites are going to get us. We don't want to do this. V'yom agam now. The people of Penuel already knew what he had told the people of Sukkos. Yeah, he already knew what he told the people of Sukkos. So they should have known, they already should have learned from that. But besides that, we're going to see the reason they felt secure in doing what they were doing was they had a tower. And they weren't afraid of him because they figured we'll keep him out. We'll just lock ourselves up in the tower and we don't have to be afraid of him. Now, on the other hand, because they had a tower, they didn't really have to be afraid of Midian either. So, at least Sukkos, they didn't help, Gidon. They were being political. They were hedging their bets. We didn't know who's going to win. So, if we give you food, then Midian will punish us. We understand that. But these people at Penuel, they were safe in their tower. They really should have helped. So, he said, you know what, if I come back in peace, he doesn't say if. Again, at this point, Gidon, he saw the miracles. You don't, with 300 men, you don't defeat thousands of men, hundreds of thousands of men, and not realize that Hashem is going to help you. So he says, when I come back in peace, etotzef hamigdolza, this tower is gone. We're going to wipe it out. So, that's the... you could say that Gidon at this point has had a hard time. I mean, here he hasn't even gotten to the enemy, and he's facing, this is his third interaction. And each one is progressively worse, if you could say. But he doesn't let it get in the way of doing the job. He gets the job done. In other words, he's got to save the Jewish people. And as much as people don't have faith in him, that's not going to get in his way. So again, sometimes we go out to do a job. We go out to do the right thing. And we hear complaints. And we say, who needs this? And then we don't. That's not right. We're doing an important job. Who cares about the complaints? That we should never let the complaints bother us. And then sometimes we see people don't have faith that we're going to succeed. And so we say, well, they say I'm not going to succeed. I'm not going to try. No, you don't pay attention to that. If you feel you can succeed, go do it. Go for it. And that's what Gidon does. But we should realize that people that succeed, it's not because they didn't have people that complained. And it's not because they didn't have naysayers. They had that, the same way we do. But they persevered. They kept at it. And that's really the secret. And nothing's changed. Like I said, sometimes we're at those meetings where there's people that complain. Why'd you do this? Why'd you do it that way? And then there are people that say, it'll never work. It doesn't mean that, it'll work. The only difference is Gidon was able to come back and teach them a lesson, right? But it's just part of human nature that sometimes when we run into obstacles, we retreat and we don't do what we need to do. And when we're doing important work, we can't let the complainers or the obstacles, the people that say we won't succeed, stop us. So, verse 10, the Devata Muda Bakarka, they were in Karakumane Minka Chamesh Asr Elif. And this was 15,000. 15,000 to 300. It's a much smaller group. Called the servant called Machanamene Kavanofu Meyav Esrim Elifish. Now he had defeated 120,000 people, Sholokhov, and those days they didn't have, mass weapons like we do now. To kill 120,000 people with the sword is, you've got to do it hand by hand. It's really hard work. That's a lot of bloodshed, yes, correct. Verse 11. Yal Gidon Dera Kashkun. So Gidon is very, very interesting. As much as he has faith, he still doesn't do a suicide mission. He still does it in the wisest way possible. If you remember, when he came down with the 300 men, he had the whole strategy with the chauffeurs and the torches to surprise them, right? So here also he has a strategy. This was the strategy the Germans used in World War II, when they attacked France. They came through the Ardennes forest which wasn't supposed to be passable. Since it wasn't supposed to be passable, so therefore it wasn't fortified, because they didn't believe modern tanks would be able to get through. So they found a way to get through, and so the French, you know, the Maginot Line didn't protect them. And so that was, you know, that was history. So that's basically what he did. He knew that there was one area that that he wasn't expected to attack from, and so he came around that side. He came up by the way the tent dwellers zone, which is also interesting. You go to Israel now, you still see the tent dwellers. It's the Bedouins. They're still in that part of the world. They've always been, I mean, in America, you don't have that, you know, people with the tents or the gypsies. But that Middle East, you've always had the tent dwellers. So he did a surprise attack from that way. And that last thing in their minds was the Gita was chasing after them. They had no clue that he was coming. Verse 12, and they ran away. He caught the two great kings, he put the fear of God into them. He terrified them. And this was important again, because otherwise the Midianites might regroup and try to come back. This was the finishing off what he had started to do, to provide the security for the Jewish people. Verse 13. So he comes back. So now he wants to punish Sukkos. Now, interesting enough, he realized, and this is also important, that sometimes when somebody's wronged us, we punish everybody. That's not fair. So he didn't want to punish the whole city of Sukkos. He realized that it was just the leaders, just the people who had refused to provide him with bread, they were the ones at fault. But he had no claim against the people of Sukkos themselves, so he wanted to find a way just to punish the leaders. So this is what he did. He captured a younger person from the men of Sukkos, and he had him, he said, here, write down the elders of your town. Shivim v'shiva ish. And he wrote down 77 men. That was the official group. Every town had their town elders that made their policies. So he said, those are the ones. I want to find out who made the decision not to give us help. Who were the elders of your town? So he wrote it down. And by the way, Jews always knew how to read and how to write. Next, you know, here they, you know, that's many societies who, you know, even a few hundred years ago, where if you called a child over, they wouldn't necessarily know how to write. Here, you know, you just pull a child out, of course he knows how to write. Writes the 77 names down. Now that he knows how to write, he knows all the politics. He knows all the, you know, all the senators. Today, if you ask, they have these studies where they ask people who's the president, who's the vice president. They have no clue who's the speaker. No, you know, the average American, they don't. So this guy knew all 77 of the elders. But Yavo Anchi Sukkos, verse 15. So he comes, so he says, you remember you said you scorned at me and you said, do you think I would be able to get them? He said, here they are. Asher krasim leimor, akav zeves emuna. Ata b'yirech, and now they're in our hands. You no longer have to live in fear. Kinitin l'asham ha'yefim lechem. You didn't want to give hungry people bread. And part of his complaint against them was that even if they were not going to fight against them, they were just hungry. Wouldn't you help a person if they were hungry? Like, they didn't have to say that they necessarily would get in a fight with Midian for giving us food. They could have just said we were feeding people because they were hungry. But they didn't want to risk that. Person has to be willing to help people, they didn't want to do that. So they were going to get their lesson. He took the elders, he took the thorns, they got the treatment, whatever that was. I don't know if, it doesn't say exactly how they gave them the thorn treatment. I don't know if they tied them to the backs of their horses and, you know, or whatever they did. There were a lot of thorns around there. I don't know, my translation is funny. It says he broke the medicine, but the Hebrew doesn't say that. It just says like the, they knew the thorns. I don't know what the, I don't know what your translation says. How do you teach him? Taught him a lesson? Yeah. Taught him a lesson. What was the other? Scratched him?
It says thrashed.
Oh, thrashed him.
So, they were beaten with the thorns.
Could be, the Hebrew, the word, it says v'yoda behem, like it was known to them. He made himself known to them. This was going to be something they weren't going to forget.
Okay.
So that was their lesson. Verse 17. Now he came back to Penuel. to teach them their lesson. And so he had said he was going to break down their tower. Now, that's Migdal Penuel Natsa. So he came back, he did what he said, he broke down their tower. And then what happened is, V'yargeth Anshe'ir. And it says here that he killed the people of the city. Now, he hadn't said that he was going to do that, and why did he do that? So some people say that the people weren't going to stand still and let him knock down their tower. And they fought back, and he had to kill them. Again, it's a terrible thing, but he felt that there is a concept, and this is something we see in the book of Judges, and in general, that when you have a king or a leader, you have to be loyal and show allegiance to that leader. And if a person does not listen to the king, then they are subject to being killed. That's and the Torah upholds that the king has the right to kill people that are not loyal to him, that are don't follow the orders of the king, a benevolent king, you know, obviously, like the. So by them not being willing to help him in battle, they deserve to. He had to set an example of, you know, they weren't willing to show loyalty or allegiance to him. Verse 18, Vayomer. So now, all that's left are, what are you going to do with these two kings? It's interesting. Throughout Tanakh, you often find this, that they spared the kings for last. I don't know if it was to make a show trial of it, or what the reason was. The kings usually were the ones responsible for these battles. And so, sometimes it was like a certain, like justice was done. Somewhat like, you know, the Habdil, you know, the U.S. did after World War II, where they had the trials of the Nazis, you know, to punish the leaders who had done all this. So here also was the trial to punish the leaders. So the one thing about Tanakh, and this is a constant, is that there are details that it doesn't go into. And it's not a history, but it doesn't tell you everything. Otherwise, it would be much bigger. And you see that in many cases, because we only have parts of a discussion. And because we only have parts, sometimes we have to imagine what the other part was. So he asks the men over here, Eifa Anashim Eshu, who were the people you had killed on Tavor? Now, Tavor was the area where he was from, Gidom. That was, Gidom was from Mount Tabor. And apparently, these Midianites had made a raid near his hometown. So he said, he asked these Midianite kings really about his family, because that's where his family lives. So he said, where's my family? Where are the people that had, when you conquered that, when you made that terrorist raid on that area? Now again, it doesn't say that they made the raid, but you have to assume from his question that he knew that they had done that. So he said, where are the people that you killed? Vayomer, and they said, Kamocha Kamoham. You could say they were not repentant. They were saying, well, we'd like to do that to you too. But that's hard to imagine that they would say that. It could be that they were saying that the people that we killed, they were just like you. They look like you. Echad Tor Pnei Amela. In other words, these were his brothers, his cousins. They looked similar to Gidom. Vayomer Achai Bnei Imihem. He says, oh my goodness. Well, I said, oh, he said, those were his brothers. He realized that these leaders, these wicked Midianites, had killed his family. Because while he was leading trying to save the Jewish people, his own family was killed. So, Chai Hashem, lo, he swears by Hashem, Hachayisim Osam, he said, had you not been so cruel, and had you, you know, you didn't have to, you know, you didn't have to kill the people, lo, Rai, I wouldn't kill you today. But because you... whether it was that they, you know, that they didn't, they spared the kings, or they let the kings go, or whatever it was, he said that had you not been so brutal, you wouldn't face the punishment that you're going to face. But now that by your own words, you've admitted to killing the people unnecessarily, now you're going to face the music. That's basically what he says to them. Verse 20. So here he asks his firstborn son. He feels that now that these people have killed his family members, there's a mitzvah to avenge your family, to avenge these, to bring them to justice. So he calls his firstborn, if you ask him before, Kuma Rago Sub. He says, here, you do the job. He says, you kill these two kings. Veloshela Fanar Chabo. And this son of Gidom can't pick up his sword, Kiore Kiodenonar, because he was afraid. You might think that Gidom was a big, tough murderer. You know, like you read this stuff, you know, it sounds like Patton or something, you know, yeah, wipe down the tower, they get in your way, you kill them, you hit them with a thorn. It sounds like a big, tough general. And then you read about his son, and you see Guido was not a bloody person at all. In fact, we remember him back with his father. He was just taking care of the wheat. And it's almost like, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, like the Israelis. They just want to be farmers. They just want to do their own thing. And because, you know, they get called up the army, they have to do their job. You know, you have to do what you got to do. And his son is not willing to do that. We're going to see later on, we're going to learn about his sons, Gideon's sons. But most of them were very peaceful and not willing to shed blood. So verse 21, V'yomer Zebek HaSamuna. Now, Zebek HaSamuna, they didn't want to be killed by a young person either, because a young person isn't that strong. If he were to try to kill them with a sword, it would take a long time. And it could be very excruciating. So they said, please, Pagapito, please kill us. So we'd rather have you do it. But Yochum Gino just had enough of them. He went and he got up. He killed them himself. Now, he wanted to publicize the miracle. Apparently, the people, they used to have different kinds of ornaments on their camels. I guess the kings had a very big, he calls it a crescent. I'm not sure if it is a crescent or, I don't know what it was. They had some kind of ornament on their camels. And apparently the leaders probably were made out of gold. So he took the two ornaments of these two kings from their camels. And V'yomer Ish Yisrael Gideon. We're going to see what he's going to do with them in a minute. When a person has a miracle happen to them, they need to remember it. In fact, that's what Hanukkah is all about, is remembering the miracle. Right? We need to appreciate that Hashem has saved us and brought us here. And we're not supposed to have a short memory, because history repeats itself, and we were spared for greater things in the future. And so it's very important to remember that Hashem saved us or spared us. And so he wanted to do something to be a memory for future generations. And we're going to see in a second what he's going to do with those things. Now, let's see what the men say. So the people of Israel, they say to Gido, you know, you're a great leader. You are Mishol Banu. You are ours. Rule over us. Be our ruler. Be our king. And not only do we want you to be your king, we want it to be hereditary. We feel so in debt to you, and we feel that you are such a great leader that we want to make you a monarch. Kiyoshata miyad nijin. Now, by the way, later on we're going to have the word melech. They didn't say melech, they said moshal. A moshal is a ruler. A ruler isn't necessarily a king. They talk about that later. We'll see that even if it's hereditary, there's a ruler and there's a king. A king has a certain trapping of office. A ruler is more like a... could be more like a I don't know, not someone, maybe not a king, but more like a general or a mayor or something like that. By a prophet, that's right. Yeah, that's going to happen later, where we wanted a formal king, you know, with all the trappings of the office. This was, they said, Mushal, be a ruler for us, a Mushal, a ruler. He said, I'm not your ruler, my kid's not your ruler, Hashem is your ruler. So you just get a feeling of who Gideon was. You know, he wasn't out for himself. He wasn't trying to make the most for himself. He wanted the people to be loyal to Hashem. They were saying to Gideon, we'd like to give you something. We'd like to make you the ruler. He says, no, Hashem is your ruler. Verse 24, Gideon says, I do want one thing. He says, give me the nose rings that you got. They all had the nose rings of the Yishmaelim. That they had conquered. Verse 25. He put down the blanket. All the soldiers gave up the golden rings and the ornaments that they had gotten. When they weighed all of the ornaments that they had gotten, all the nose rings, it was quite a bit of gold. Besides the gold that he had taken from those two kings, and there was also quite a bit of valuable cloth. And they also had, apparently their camels had jewelry. You know, they had, you know, they liked those camels. They put on, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen camels wearing jewelry, but the camels had chains on their necks, gold chains around their necks. So, and they had on their noses and around their necks. They spent a lot of time with those camels, I guess. Verse 27. The Asos did give an ephod. So he made an ephod, which is not clear what it was, what exactly an ephod is. Later on, an ephod is like an apron kind of thing, but it's not so clear what is, how do you have a gold apron exactly? What is it exactly? But yes, and he put it in his hometown. Now, we have a tendency at that time that whenever a person had a thing, after time, people started to worship it as a god. And so people felt that after a while, they turned it into some kind of shrine to the ephod. And that was a mistake. Perhaps Gideon should have thought more about this monument before he created it. We learned like the person sometimes has to be careful with the things they do, because if they're not careful, later on people will make a mistake with it. So these are Kol Yisrael. In fact, later on the people strayed. The Gideon the Bay was a stumbling block. People became a magical kind of thing. That's just a side issue. That Gideon meant it well. He wanted to have a memory of the battle, and the people later on turned it into an idol. 28, Vikna Midian with Nabin and Yisrael. And the end of the story was that Midian was humbled in front of the Yisrael. Lo Yisifu Lassis Rosham. And they didn't pick up their heads. But Tishka Da'orat Aboim Shana B'Megidim. 40 years, which is a long time in the Middle East. They had peace and quiet because of Gideon. Yelech Yuval Ben Yoish V'Yeshu V'Yisrael. Gideon retires. He goes to his house. It's interesting why it calls him Yerubal over here. What did he do after the war? He went back to teaching people to abandon the idols. That's Yerubal, was that Gideon was teaching people to abandon the idols. He fought against the Baal. So he went back to his house. Now that he was finished with the country, there was peace and quiet, so he went back to building his house. So Gideon Hayashibim Bani had 70 sons. Yotzirei Kinoshim Rabotai, he took a lot of wives. Some people say that this was critical. He was criticized for this. It was almost like, for taking so many wives and having a big family. Like, the way that he did it, we'll see, it didn't come out well for him. Sometimes not everybody has a happy ending to the story. But he goes back, he settles down, he has a lot of wives and a lot of children. And the wives are regular wives. Verse 31, Upilaksha Shebishkam. Now, there's something called a pelegish. They call it a concubine. A concubine in Jewish law is actually like a regular wife, except that he signs a prenup that he doesn't have to pay. See, a regular wife you have to support, and you have to share all your wealth with. But after he had 70, I guess he didn't have that much left to share with another one, so he signs like a prenup with her that she's not going to get any of his... usually if somebody agrees to share their life with you, you owe them everything. You have no right to hold anything back. And so usually that's not looked at as a proper thing. But he did take one wife from Shechem, which he didn't make any promises to. That's the Pelegish of Shechem. And he had children from her also. And the name of his child was Avimelech. Now, we're going to see, the Avimelech means someday it will come to me to be a ruler, to be king. Avimelech, I will be a king. I will be somebody important. And for whatever reason, this one son that was born out from the mother that he made no commitments to, we're going to see wants to be the king of the other 70 sons. So, but we'll have to keep that in mind when we get to next week. The Yamoskina ben Yoish Bishet, he died in a ripe old age. Everything was good as long as he was alive. He covered with Kever Yoish Avi, Bafra Avi Ezra, he was buried there. That was Gido. 33, Vehikashir Meis Gido Vishu Bnei Yisrael Vizunach Rebam. But after he died, there was no one to fight the Baal. They went back. Again, this is the pattern. When we have a great leader, when they're alive, when they're around, we do good. And when they go away, the people go back. You see, Baal Bris Lelokim, the people made the idols again. And we forgot Hashem. Here Hashem was saving him from all our enemies. And we're going to see that not only did we forget Hashem, we even forgot the house of Gideon. to call a Tova Sha'asa Yisrael for all the good things he did. So again, we kind of wish the end would be a little better. We'll find out next week, you know, what happened after. He led a ripe old age and everything was good. And he certainly is one of our heroes for saving the Jewish people, for risking his life, for fighting against the Baal, and standing up to all the adversaries and defeating the enemy.